We're looking for insight. This man has insight. He is Robert Mays. He's back with us. He's from the Athletic Football Show, and he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Robert, always great to have you with us. Thank you for your time.
Hey, Robert.
God bless you for thinking I have insight into this. That's a real level of confidence that I'm not sure I've earned.
Give me two reactions. Number one, when the Browns take Dylan Gabriel at 94 in the third round, and he's, what, the fifth quarterback off the board, and then when they take Shedeur Sanders in the fifth round at 144.
Dylan Gabriel thing, I understand it. I thought they were going to take a quarterback at some point on day two, most likely, because I just didn't think they were going to take one on day one. I never believed that to be the case. I figured they would take Travis Hunter or do something like they did. You know, that trade in and of itself is not surprising based on the current state of the Browns roster. So when they took Dylan Gabriel, it was like, okay, you know, there's the guy. There's the guy that they want to bet on, and I think that he'll have a real chance to play and start this year. And if it doesn't work out, then you're in a spot where you have two first-round picks and you can make a go at it next season. When they took Shedeur, it was a little bit shocking, just because they'd already addressed the position. But if you don't have an answer at the position and you essentially get a free roll on a guy that, even if he's limited athletically or talent-wise, was probably worth taking in the first two rounds of this draft, the downside only exists in the extracurricular stuff. It's managing the questions. It's managing the room, all of that. And I think Kevin Stefanski can handle that. So this is a team that I think saw a bargain, saw a potential value, and jumped on it. Now it's just going to be about navigating that situation on a non-football level as much as a football level.
Who do you think the Browns starting quarterback is? We're sitting here and we're just like throwing darts at a dartboard at this point.
We kind of think it's Pickett.
We think it's Pickett.
I've made this joke a lot over the last like 72 hours. That scene in The Dark Knight where he snaps the pool cue in half and he just throws it on the ground and says, we're going to have tryouts. That's going to be training camp in Brea this year. I mean, that's my best guess. And I think that was always going to be the case. You know, when they were conceiving of how to build the room this spring, I think it was, the Kenny Pickett thing again, you're giving up nothing to get him. He's somebody where if you want to tell yourself a story about his career, you can easily do it. Matt Canada was, I think, one of the worst offense coordinators in football for a majority of Kenny Pickett's career. Then they go out and get Justin Fields. He's unhappy. He goes to Philly. He barely plays. So we've never really seen Kenny Pickett in even a reasonable situation for more than like a game or two last year with the Eagles. I don't think it's a strong bet, but I understand doing it when you didn't have to give up anything. Joe Flacco, known quantity, break in case of emergency. If he has to play, we know he can play. And then a rookie. And the best case scenario for the Browns is you have an open competition in training camp between those three guys, and the rookie wins it. Because at least with the rookie, we've never seen it before. There's theoretical upside, and if you get value in a guy that you draft after the first round, a quarterback, it's immense. It's a huge hit. Now, it's the same situation, except you throw a fifth-round pick who's not really a fifth-round pick into the equation. So I just think that they're going to start camp, start the offseason program, and they're going to be open-minded about who the best option is and just go from there.
Robert, we saw some mock drafts that had Shedeur as the number one pick overall. Not many. More that had him as the number two pick. Then you heard rumblings that he might drop into the second round. I heard only one rumble that said this guy could drop to the third round. Should he have dropped to the fifth? And why did he?
I think a lot of people have spoken about this really intelligently. And we did a live draft show on Thursday and Friday night on the Athletic Football Show that I do with Dane Brugler, who is the best in the business. And
Dane's
a
local
guy. We were talking
about
it in real time.
Dane's
from here. We were getting a little bit deeper into, he's a Cleveland guy. I mean, I'm sure you guys are familiar with Dane's work, but we were getting deeper into the draft and he hadn't been picked yet. And he just said that you can't go into these meetings with teams thinking you're the one that has leverage and thinking you're the one that's going to dictate how that interaction goes. And I think that's how he went into a lot of this. And so I think it's twofold. When people, Dane had him as his 34th player in the draft, and I think a lot of people had him in a similar range, you know, just outside of the first round or, you know, in the 30s in terms of prospect rankings. That's what his talent would dictate, okay? So him falling to the second round based on talent, I don't think is the least bit surprising. When you get into the second and third round as a quarterback, now you're on the border of whether or not you're going to be drafted as a starter, right? Like Tyler Shuck is like right there. When you get further down, when you're Dylan Gabriel, the third round, you're drafted to essentially be a backup unless it's a unique case like the Browns is. So teams are doing the calculus in their minds when we get into the back half of day three and then into day two and into day three, where they're saying, do we really want to invite this into our building if he's only just going to be a backup? Is this worth the headache when he's probably not even going to be our starting quarterback? And when you have enough teams saying no to that over and over and over again, I think that's what happens. And then the last point I think is worth mentioning, and Dane brought up again, was a lot of teams didn't even think he'd be on the board. So I'm sure there are a lot of teams that didn't even do the homework on him. So when you have all of those other factors contributing to this, plus the fact that there were a limited number of teams who even would have drafted him to begin with, I think that you can kind of chart a path to what we saw last weekend.
To me, looking at the Browns draft, everything kind of made sense until we got to Shedeur Sanders. And then that brings into play who made the call on Shedeur Sanders. Are you here? I mean, I know what they said. I know what some people are saying. I'm just curious, are you hearing anything on who made the call on Sanders, only because it just looks out of place compared to the rest of the draft?
Not really. I mean, I haven't really done a ton of digging on it. Gotcha. I think that I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to make this like a conspiracy theory thing and just say that like Jimmy Haslam's back there like working Andrew Berry like a puppet at that stage of the draft. I just don't believe that to be true. Mm-hmm. Like, I honestly think Andrew is the one who is probably wired in such a way to make a decision like this. You know, he was only in Philly for a year, but I think that it's not an accident that he winded up with that organization, just because I think Andrew thinks about the sport in a similar way to guys like Howie, when it's like, where are the arbitrage opportunities? Where are the edges we can find? Where are the value propositions that we can tap into? And at that stage of the draft, Shedeur Sanders is a value proposition. He's a distressed asset at that point. And so to see Andrew do that in that moment, I don't think is necessarily surprising. So I'm sure some people are going to want to make it more nefarious and more complicated than that. At first glance, I just am not doing that, because I actually do think it's in character with the way that Andrew Berry thinks about building a football team.
Robert Mays joining us from the Athletic Football Show with Dane Brugler, who, of course, Mountain Union guy and has been on our show before, and Robert writing for the Athletic as well. If you had to pick the guy with the most upside, who you think this guy has the best chance of being a starting quarterback in the NFL and being at the very least competent, would it be Pickett, who had a rough go with Matt Canada and all that stuff, which I couldn't agree with you more? Dylan Gabriel, who, if he starts, would be what, the one of four starting quarterbacks in the league who's under 6 foot tall? Or Shedeur, with all of everything that happened to him in the draft?
On a football level, I'd still say Shedeur. You know, when you watch him, it's not a disaster. Like, there's a reason that the guy was being pumped up as like a top 50 pick in this draft, or somebody that could be taken in the back half of the first round. Like, his physical traits don't wow you. And the thing that worries me the most is when you watch him play, the arm strength isn't fantastic and all that, but it's not what he is as a thrower that concerns me. When he gets into trouble, he does not have the requisite level of athleticism to get himself out of trouble. The amount of times he's quickly chased down as he's trying to either drift out of the pocket or escape the pocket, you just don't really see that with the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Even the guys who aren't overwhelming athletes, like a Brock Purdy, for example, he has enough acceleration and quickness to get himself out of trouble. And so the fact that Shedeur is somebody that doesn't have great pocket presence and also doesn't have the athleticism to mitigate that lack of pocket presence, that's what worries me. But you watch him, he's undeniably accurate. He is really tough in the pocket. There are some pretty darn good throws on tape. And so I do still think, if you're looking at the football characteristics here, he is a better prospect as a quarterback than Dylan Gabriel. And I think that's why he was treated as such over the course of the process. That being said, there is a reason he fell to the fifth round, but I can't really speak to how that personality stuff is going to affect him moving forward. I can only speak to how it affected him in the process with teams.
Are the Browns going to look back and say, why didn't we draft Travis Hunter?
I don't think you can do that.
Okay.
I just think that you have to trust your process in those moments. And I know that's really difficult to do, but this is a team and a franchise that, you know, we're going to look at the Sean Watson contract, and that's what people are going to obsess about. And I completely understand that, right? The amount of money that they're going to have to pay him even moving forward. to me, this element of it that was always more depressing and more detrimental to where the Browns were is the draft picks. You have an entire era of missed draft picks. The Browns had more top 100 picks in this draft than they had in the past two drafts combined. And let's not even talk about top 50 picks. This is a team that needed a reset when it came to building out the young cost-controlled talent on the team. I mean, you can count the guys that are rookie contract contributors on the Browns from last year. You can do it on one hand. They needed to increase that number. So I know it's going to be tough if Travis Hunter is a great player to watch him succeed in Jacksonville, but I'm just not sure there's any prospect that's not a quarterback that to me is worth three top 40 picks, including a first rounder that could end up in the top 10 that I've never seen play football before, like Travis Hunter.
I don't know how they turned down that trade. I'm with you on that. You can't turn that one down, can you?
I don't think so. Just based on where they are as a franchise, I don't think so. You know, if you're a team, every team is in a different set of circumstances. Every team is at a different place in their build. But for the Browns specifically, I just don't think you can turn it down, especially when your quarterback situation is unsettled. So the Jags, you know, the Jags have talent. The Jags are fun. It's a first-year head coach with a roster that I still don't think is great. So there is a chance, you know, say Trevor, we always do this. Remember when, I can't remember who it was. Maybe it wasn't the Texans, but the Texans had traded away the future firsts, maybe for Tunsil. That's what it was. So the Texans traded those future firsts for Tunsil. And people are looking at the Texans and they're saying, oh, well, they have Deshaun Watson. They'll be fine. And then Watson gets hurt and they're picking in the top five. This stuff happens all the time. The Seahawks did it with the Russell Wilson deal when they traded, or with the Jamal Adams trade, where it's like, well, we're a good team. We'll never be doing this. And then a guy gets hurt and you're picking in the top 10. And so there's a chance next year, based on how things go, that they have two picks in the top 15 in a draft where they need a quarterback. So I just think based on where they are and based on the holes on the roster and the way the last few drafts have gone, it's really, really, really hard to say no to a deal like that.
Robert, last thought. Browns also drafted Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State, then Dylan Sampson, the SEC Offensive Player of the Year, a couple of running backs. Did you like those picks? And it screams to me, here comes the Kevin Stefanski offense back in full force.
I think that's exactly what it says. I think that's exactly what it says. And even looking at, you know, some of the things that they've done in free agency and, you know, the staff and how they've kind of remade that, I think this is we're getting back to basics. We're getting back to meat and potatoes, Kevin Stefanski football, because that is where we are comfortable. And, you know, Jerome Ford is going to be heading into year three, I believe. You know, he's kind of a boom or bust player. I don't think he's going to be in their future plans. So them just deciding to remake their entire running back room in one single offseason, I don't think should be surprising to anybody. And I 100% agree with you that that is the message it sends to me.
Robert, great to have you with us again. We thank you for your time. Robert Mays, The Athletic Football Show. Make sure you listen. Make sure you read him at The Athletic.
Thanks,
Robert. Robert joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.